I'm a productive member of society, and I look forward to that day he is released, and I want to help him reinvigorate himself, integrate himself, I meant to say, back into society as a productive member of our community.
That was Davey D talking to Donald Lacey about his production, Color Struck. And now stay tuned for Transpositive. This is KBOO Portland, and it's 5:59.
Waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. My name is Emma. I am one of the co-hosts and I go by she and her pronouns.
Oh, hi. My name is Carrie Cantrell. I can use any pronoun. I'm not picky.
I'm Nicolette Schweizer. I'm also one of the co-hosts and I use A&M pronouns.
Good evening. I'm Bryant Campbell with the Oregon Youth Authority and I am he, him.
And my name is Rowan Everard, and I use he and him pronouns.
Great. So let's jump right into, we have some announcements and some things we need to talk about that are going on in the trans, gender, queer, intersex, gender non-conforming community. And so I guess we will start with Nicolette.
All right. So the first thing I wanted to talk about today was last month I got to go to the Columbia Pagan Pride Festival at Oaks Park. It was wonderful. And something I noted there was a workshop I went to taught by Lupa. She's a very famous author in the pagan community. I was so excited to meet her. She taught a workshop about inclusivity in the pagan community because, you know, people who follow minority religions are often minorities of other sorts, but unfortunately, some pagans are still racist, homophobic, biphobic, transphobic, etc. So, you know, she talked about a lot of ways that people who are minorities can be more included in the pagan community and how people with privilege can be allies to people who might not have that same privilege. On the transphobia issue in particular, for example, she talked about an incident at PantheaCon a few years ago where Z Budapest held a women's ritual but wouldn't allow trans women to attend the ritual. So the year after that, she held another women's ritual, and this time there was a large protest outside the ritual. And ever since that year, Z Budapest has not returned, and PantheaCon now openly states expectations of inclusivity. So like women's rituals must now be open to all women and things like that. And another problem in the pagan community is non-binary people often aren't included, especially when, you know, like a lot of Wiccan rituals work with fertility and the gender binary and things like that, the god and the goddess. And I had found that problem myself in the community. So Lupa's suggestions to solve these problems were to accept that there are marginalized people in the pagan community, to get out of your own head and listen to other people's oppression and needs, think about inclusion before it comes up, be vocal about oppression, and actively support and promote minorities, open men's and women's rituals to trans people, and for non-binary people, research divinities that are neither male or female, which may be more appropriate for them. So that's I wanted to share that about Pagan Pride because I thought that was, you know, great for our community. A couple other things I wanted to mention. In recent news, the government has now begun paying for gender reassignment treatments and surgeries for eligible soldiers. They're spending, I think, up to about $4 million on that. And also later this month, October 11th is National Coming Out Day, which celebrates coming out as LGBT plus or as an ally. So feel free to celebrate that day however you wish.
Great. Thank you, Nicolette. That's so great. And so we also have some information that Carrie wants to share.
Thanks, Nicolette. I actually thought that was really interesting. I went to an Impulse Festival last February, and they were really, really good about using non-gender terms for divinities and referred to them as shining ones, which I thought that was beautiful.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, shining ones. So we're all shining ones. We're all stars. but yeah, the information that I have... So I'm an intersex person, intersex body person. I'm one of the founders of the Northwest Intersex Action League here in Portland, myself, and of course a collaboration of everybody, including the Q Center and people here at KBOO and, you know, everyone here in Portland. But the Northwest Intersex Action League is basically existing to support and create awareness for the intersex community here in Portland and the greater Northwest. This is my... Oh, gosh, my first year, full year here in Portland. We're still a pretty new organization. But coming up October 26th is Intersex Awareness Day. It's a national holiday. So there's lots of projects going around the intersex community. I'm posting a video a day, you know, with just art pieces and stuff like that. But it's all going to be culminating to the 26th. And on the 26th of October, I've got a benefit concert planned, a benefit gathering. And it's going to be at the Q Center, Community Center on Mississippi Avenue. That's October 26th. It's a Wednesday. And the times are going to be between 5 and 9 o'clock. So it's the perfect time to come out for a happy hour before it gets too dark and dreary, especially if you're right there in North Portland, Mississippi's great walking area. So, yeah, please stay tuned for more information on that. You can find information through the event page. The event's going to be called Intersex in PDX. So you can search for that on Facebook. You can search for the public face of our organization. It's the Northwest Intersex Action League. You can search for that on Facebook as well, or you can email me. That's nwial.pdx@gmail.com. So yeah, throughout the month of October, you can look out for more information. And also if you've got collaborative pieces that you'd like to contribute, if you're an artist, if you just want to be involved somehow as an ally, please be in touch because... you know, it's all about that collab, so we like it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. So our guests today are Bryant Campbell with the Oregon Youth Authority and Kelly O'Keeley with the Oregon Youth Authority. Are you there, Kelly?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, great. And we're going to be talking today about the Oregon Youth Authority and trans, queer, intersex, gender non-binary, generally queer kids within the Youth Authority and what their story is, how the Oregon Youth Authority is helping people who have questions, who are exploring their gender identity while incarcerated as youth, how they're supporting them in that exploration, and also the intersection of like people who want to provide care for those youth who may be out in the community. So welcome, Bryant.
Thank you.
And welcome, Kelly.
Thank you.
First, if we could just have a discussion, and Nicolette and Carrie, feel free to jump in at any time with your questions. If we could just talk about what is the Oregon Youth Authority, because I think a lot of people don't even know what it is. So if one of you would care, Kelly or Bryant, would care to like talk about that institution?
Well, I guess I'll start. Basically, the Youth Authority is a, I guess at the foundation of it, we are a youth corrections agency We have both secure and transition environments. And what a lot of people don't know is that the Youth Authority operates 10 facilities around the state, both secure facilities and, again, transition facilities. And so we have, typically people think of McLaren as the Oregon Youth Authority. And even in our discussion this afternoon, that came up. But we actually have facilities in Burns. We have two facilities in Salem, Woodburn, Warrington. We have our Rogue Valley facility, Tillamook, Oak Creek, which is our female facility, as well as three camp facilities, Camp Florence, Camp Tillamook, and then Riverbend in LeGrand. The Oregon Youth Authority focuses on reformation and treatment for youth that are incarcerated.
Kelly, would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah. So Bryant is more on our facility end of things, and I am more on the community end of things. And so in addition to the facilities that Bryant just talked about, we also contract with a number of community residential treatment programs that serve youth, and we also have foster care. Now, our foster care is separate and apart from DHS. We have our own OYA foster care. And so not only do we have the correctional facility side of OYA, but we also serve youth in the community in various settings, like I said, in a residential treatment program or in OYA foster homes.
So what kind of youth, when you say that these are people who are incarcerated, can you tell us a little bit about are these specifically from Oregon, first of all?
Yes.
Yeah. And how do the youth get into the system? How do they end up under, is this basically an agency of the state?
Yes, the Youth Authority is a state agency.
What happens is that youth will be arrested for committing some kind of crime. They will go before a judge, and if they're adjudicated and the judge commits them to the custody of the Oregon Youth Authority, then they will either go to one of our youth correctional facilities or they will go to a residential treatment program to get the treatment that they need in regards to their criminal activity. Most of the time, most of our youth come from similar backgrounds that youth from child welfare system experience. So many, many of our youth have experienced abuse or trauma or neglect, drug and alcohol issues. Many, many of our youth come from really rough backgrounds. But once they get committed to us, like I said, they either go to a correctional facility or a residential treatment program to get treated for whatever their needs may be.
Mm-hmm. And about how many people are we talking about in the whole agency altogether between your two ends of things, Bryant and Kelly? Do you have a rough idea?
Bryant, do you have a number?
I don't have a number.
Okay. I think in the community, like I said, I'm more on the community side. I believe between foster care, residential treatment programs, and then the youth who are at home with their families that are still on supervision with us, I believe we have about 1,000. Don't quote me on that. I'm not exactly sure, but mm-hmm. It's about 1,000 youth in the whole state of Oregon, I believe, in the community. And then the facilities, I am not quite as sure. Bryant, I'm not sure if you have a ballpark for...
No. Okay. So let's get to the topic that we have you on here for today, which is dealing with the trans, queer, intersex, gender, non-binary community within the Oregon Youth Authority. Sorry. So we, at TransPositive, we received an email that I think got circulated around the whole community maybe six months ago or so. And this is what clued us into what was going on with the Oregon Youth Authority, that you were looking for homes for three people who were exploring their gender identity issues and were in need of some kind of foster care or a care environment. And I think a lot of people were really interested in being supportive of that. And so that got us thinking, let's have the Oregon Youth Authority on sometime, because this must be an issue within the Oregon Youth Authority. We know that at least something 2% of all people express some kind of gender identity issues, and about 10% identify as queer on some level. So we're just wondering, how does the Oregon Youth Authority support and foster a healthy exploration of gender identity while they're incarcerated in institutions or within care facilities?
Well, while they're in facility, we have several programs that we're currently running in support of that. And one is our primary is that we run a Be Your Own Self group, which supports our transgender and LGBTQ communities. And so what that is, it's an opportunity for youth that identify as transgendered or LGBTQ to have an environment where they can come and where they can get education and where they can share and where they get the opportunity to really discuss the issues, concerns that are specific to their community and to them individually even, and specific to address issues and concerns with the Youth Authority, as well as issues and concerns that they may have in their reformation process and in their transitioning process back into the community. Mm-hmm. We have community members that support that, that come out to the facilities, that sit down with our youth, that go through and have these discussions with them and support them, along with the staff of the Youth Authority that are there in order to support these youth during this time of exploration and transformation and reformation.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, what about from your end, how do you address the needs of transgender, queer, intersex, gender non-binary youth?
Well, I will admit that this is actually pretty new for us. So basically what happened was, back in July, I had a juvenile parole and probation officer approach me and say, I have three youth on my caseload that identify as transgender, and I'd really like to find foster homes for these youth, because in our system right now, how things are is the facilities and residential treatment programs are binary. So it's either female programs and facilities or male programs and facilities. And so it's really hard to serve transgender youth in those binary systems. And so, as Bryant said, OAA is kind of working to try to kind of get that stuff figured out. But it's a process that takes time. And foster care is unique in that we can provide a family home that can specifically take transgender youth and be able to fit their unique needs and help them through that process. Well, unfortunately, when that juvenile parole and probation officer approached me, I had nothing. It's really hard to find foster homes in general. And then when you throw in the fact that these youth are on parole and probation, it becomes even harder. And then when you talk about youth having identified as transgender, it becomes even harder. And so I didn't have anything for her. And what I did was, I just didn't want to accept that. And so we went ahead and posted these ads on Craigslist in three cities, in Eugene, Salem, and Portland, hoping I would get, you know, one or two calls at least to try to find some homes, some foster homes for these youth that were identified to me. And what ended up happening was that our ad got shared and circulated, and we ended up getting dozens and dozens and dozens of phone calls. I was actually very elated and pleased by the response that we got, mostly from the LGBTQ community. And so we were able, so far since July, which is when those ads ran, we have been able to place two of those transgender youth in family foster homes. And we have a third one identified. And now that we, you know, the agency and that the juvenile parole and probation officers are seeing that we're coming up with these resources, now our list is growing. And so I know at least probably 2 to 3 more that have been added to our kind of our list, our waiting list now. So I was very pleased by the response that we got. But of course, we still need more homes that are able to take transgender youth.
Yeah, another area that we're really proud of at the Youth Authority is the development of our Transgender Gender Nonconforming Committee. And what this is a committee of staff around the Youth Authority that are made up of our field staff, our facility staff, our administrative office staff. We have Department of Justice representation on there, as well as Department of Corrections representation on their parole officers, Office of Inclusion staff, where we get together and discuss the needs of our transgendered community and of our LGBTQ community. This committee gets together to make sure that we as a state agency are tasking ourselves to provide the best service possible that we can to these youth, as well as take information from the youth specifically by way of request forms, things that they identify that they need, and we staff these requests in order to make sure that we're really taking a look at not just a collective body of what all transgendered youth might need, but what specific youth may request, and taking a look and tasking ourselves to look at those and to see what is it that we can do that really can make the reformation process better and smoother, and what is it that we can do to be an agency that's supportive of our transgendered community. And so we're really proud of that. We meet quarterly and even more frequently when we have special information requests that come up. But we're in the process of dealing with all the concerns and issues that may come up, whether it's from our field or from our facilities, and even taking a look at what direction do we need to go in order to develop policy in order to drive the business at OIA so that it is conducive and friendly to the LGBTQ and transgender community.
What are some of the needs that your client population has expressed in terms of having their gender identity concerns met while within the custody of the OIA?
We recognize that this is very extensive, very sensitive. And as Kelly said, we are at the very beginning stages of this. So we don't make claim to doing this 100% perfect. But some of the areas that we have addressed are clothing, gender-affirming clothing. The youth that want to be able to wear clothing that is conducive to the gender that they connect with. We also have names, identification. How is it that we refer to the youth in our environments? And we've been able to really staff these things and meet the needs of our youth, and recognize that in maybe in past times with a more corrections mindset, the answer would be no. And now we're recognizing that the answer is yes, and that the yes really is the answer that is more affirming and really more supportive of our transgendered population. We have youth that have requested for hormone therapy, and we've contracted with psychologists around here in the Salem area in order to that specialize to take a look at our youth and to help them with education and, you know, through that process of identification and seeing what direction that do they really want to go, and working with those youth on that. So we're looking at any issue, nothing's off the table, any issue or concern that our youth bring up, the Youth Authority is willing to take a look at and figure out what direction we need to go.
In terms of demographic, what age population does the Oregon Youth Authority serve? Like, what are the ranges of age of youth that are in the custody of the OIA?
We can serve youth from the age of 12 up until their 25th birthday, as long as the crime they committed was prior to their 18th birthday.
Mm-hmm. So I know this from working in prison justice issues. So someone can be sent to the OIA to serve out a sentence in lieu of being sent to a state correctional facility. Is that correct?
They can be housed at OIA. Mm-hmm. So if there was a teenager that was tried and convicted as an adult, but they are, you know, 17 years old or you know, under the age of 18, we can house them in our youth correctional facilities up until, again, their 25th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So within the context of the OIA, what are some of the specific requests that clients have made regarding access to surgeries, regarding access to hormone therapies, regarding access to hormone blockers? And how is the OIA able to help meet the needs of those clients when those requests have come up?
When those requests come up, we have had specific requests for hormone therapy. And the way that the Youth Authority is currently dealing with that is that the request is initiated by the youth and then comes in to that committee that I spoke of earlier, and then on to our medical staff, and our chief medical officer gets that, and they begin to work with the youth and go through in the evaluation process and take a look and see, you know, is there a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, and then they work from there. We partner with our healthcare department, and they really take it from there and attach with whatever is appropriate for that specific youth. And so it isn't a standard. It really is based specifically on the diagnosis of the specific youth and what their medical transformation and reformation needs are. And then they go forward from there.
Mm-hmm. And I do know that some of the youth that do identify as transgender choose not to do hormone therapy or other methods because they don't feel kind of ready or safe where they are in a youth correctional facility, and they choose to wait until they get out into the community. So, for example, the transgender youth that we just placed in one of our new foster homes that came out of our little ad campaign, which I'm very happy about, lived in a male correctional facility as a male, but identified as female, but really didn't feel comfortable or want to start exploring transitioning until she got into the foster home. And now that she's in the foster home, we were able to get her a clothing voucher so that she could go buy female clothing that, you know, she was more comfortable in. We are getting her set up with a therapist. All of the youth in foster care and OYA foster care are receive the Oregon Health Plan, and so hormone therapy is covered, I believe, through that. And so we are getting her started now with all of those things.
And surgeries are covered, too, through OHP.
Yeah, so that, you know, like I said, this is kind of new for our agency, but we are starting down that path now with the couple of youth that we placed in our foster homes where, you know, we do have access to those resources.
Yeah. If I may interject, Carrie Cantrell, I've mostly been sitting back on this conversation, but I see a really interesting intersection here, and I'm wondering if either one of our representatives from OIA have any knowledge. Do you know what's the state policy on giving foster programs or foster parents, non-permanent caretakers, medical proxy for a youth underage person's, you know, medical decisions, surgeries and what have you? And, you know, as Brian referred to it, diagnoses, you know, what sort of process is that when a child or a youth under 18 is in a state-run facility? There's a very famous, for me, it's famous, I'm following it very closely, but there's a case in South Carolina about a youth who is, you know, subjected to a gender reassignment surgery, an intersex youth subjected to a gender reassignment surgery in state foster care. And of course, we're talking about different age groups here, and we're talking about different influences on context and things like that. But from an intersex perspective, you know, it is kind of you know, a very important issue to at least look at and discuss as far as you know, when we're talking about irreversible decisions, we should look at context and look at what is going into making these decisions, and B, you know, what's in the best interest of a youth, you know? Is it, I think I heard a lot of talk of waiting until we're in a permanent foster home, or, you know, a lot of waiting, which is a great, I think, good thing to hear from my seat anyway. You know, and just helping make sure that these children are empowered to make their own decisions. But anyway, that's the sappy part. But I was curious about the policy part. Is there a state policy in place that you're aware of regarding that issue?
Well, what I would say is keep in mind that we are the juvenile corrections agency. We are not the child welfare agency. And so when youth are committed to our care, it is only for the period of time that they are on, that the judge has said for their crime. So if the judge says, you know, we have until their 18th birthday, then once they turn 18, then we no longer have custody of that youth. So parental rights are never terminated as far as OYA is concerned. If a kid gets done with their OYA supervision and still can't go back to their bio family, then the Department of Human Services Child Welfare may step in at that time. But just keep in mind that we only have jurisdiction for the period of time that the court has allowed based on their crime. Mm-hmm. And so we really don't have youth super long term,
gotcha.
If that makes sense. And so since this is all very new to us, I don't believe in Oregon Youth Authority, and Bryant, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that we've had a youth that has let us know and that we are aware of that identified as transgender that has gotten to the point where they are ready for or requesting surgery.
No,
so again,
not as far as I'm
aware. Go ahead, Bryant, sorry.
I was just answering, not as far as I'm aware.
Right. And so, again, this is all kind of newer to our agency, but also it is different than the child welfare system in that we do not have permanent custody of these youth.
So why don't we take a little break, because we're going to do a switch of co-hosts. And so if we could just have a little bit of music for a minute, Liam. We're going to do a quick, like, 1 or 2 minute break, and we'll be right back with Rowan. Great, we're back. We're here today on Trans Positive, and we're talking about trans, queer, gender, nonconforming, intersex youth within the Oregon Youth Authority. We're here with Bryant Campbell, Kelly O'Keeley, Nicolette, and Rowan has just joined us.
I have, it's true.
Rowan, do you have any questions you'd like to start out with?
Yeah, I guess I'm just wondering how many, or if anybody has actually ended up accessing hormones or surgery or any of that process within the Oregon Youth Authority. I know that, pardon me, I know that a lot of institutions around the state, and particularly, you know, like the Oregon, Oregon State Hospital, for example, like says that they have a process, but that people haven't really been able to access that process other than getting trapped in a sort of bureaucratic thing that says, like, you're in the process now. Hooray. Congratulations. So I'm just wondering how many people have actually successfully done that.
We currently have some youth that have accessed hormones. And because we're very new at this and at the beginning, the numbers are really low.
Sure.
We have some that have submitted requests and are going through the process. But as far as the numbers, we're talking less than 5 currently.
Sure.
Still, that's a lot.
Yeah.
By the way, just a technical note, Liam, I think we're still hearing background music. Thanks. Sorry. Kelly, what about from your end of things? Do you know how many are the numbers the same as what Brian was just saying? Oh, sorry. Are you there, Kelly?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So again, we didn't actually have any foster homes that were able or were currently serving transgender youth, and so the July ads were our first recruitment for those specific homes, and certification period takes about 2 months, and so we literally just got our first couple of homes certified. And so we placed a youth last week. We're having conversations already about hormone therapy. So we are getting the ball rolling, and that will happen. But again, it's just so we just got them certified, so we don't have any youth yet.
Great. And within the community, what kind of training are your personnel getting regarding sensitivity towards these issues? Do you have people coming in from local agencies to talk to you? Can you talk about that a little bit? Just what kind of education internally are you getting in order to better serve the needs of your client population?
Sure. Currently, we have working with our community partners and with also with Basic Rights Oregon, and doing some consulting and coming in, and we have a specific training that has taken place at our McLaren facility that we have put on for both the staff and coming up for the youth. And so we are taking a look at this training and being very specific about youth in corrections and training our staff on everything from pronouns to what are the needs of a community to how do you address a conversation if initiated by the youth, and support and doing all that we can to really basically start at ground level, at a 101 level, I would say, so that we can encourage and that we can support and guide our staff and youth on these questions and the community needs of the LGBTQ community and all that they have going forward. So we've initiated that training. We're excited about it, really excited about it. We're looking forward to moving it on and seeing how we can implement and support that training in other facilities, as well as we have our internal Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Relations, where we do a cross-cultural communications training, and we do that both for our internal staff and for several of our external and community partners. And so we're out talking about this and taking this to our facilities and making sure that they have a greater awareness, I would say, and a maybe a deeper understanding of what the needs and concerns, a language, and all of the other aspects of this community are.
Go ahead, Ron.
I have a question for Kelly. Is that mm-hmm. the correction? Yay. My question is, related to this, I've heard some sort of rumblings about people in the coming legislative session wanting to sort of retool the foster care system in Oregon in a general sort of way. And it looks like there could be some, you know, like everybody's kind of going to pile on and be like, this is what we want out of this. And I wonder, were that to happen, what kind of policies do you think it would be useful to pursue with regard to queer and trans youth within the state level?
Yeah, so keep in mind again that what you're hearing, all the legislative talk and the retooling, that's really the DHS child welfare foster care system. That's not OAA.
Okay.
And so we are much, much, much smaller, but we are very separate.
Okay, gotcha.
And so honestly, our system runs pretty well. We haven't had all of the things that you're hearing. That has not really been an issue with us at all. We're kind of a smaller and different, more targeted foster care system. So now that being said, a lot of times when they do make policies or new legislation about DHS foster care, it does sometimes trickle to down to us. So we always pay attention to that, and we try to get ahead of it. So, you know, if they are going to start requiring some things of DHS, then sometimes if it makes sense, we will jump on board and just do it, you know, ahead of time just to kind of keep up. I don't know that I can speak to what my recommendations would be as far as for trans and queer youth. Honestly, I feel like I'm excited about the direction that OYA is going and the fact that we are paying attention to this right now. I don't believe, you know, I could be wrong about this, but I don't believe that many other juvenile justice systems are probably looking at this as much as we are. And we just got started, and so I'm predicting, you know, bigger and better and greater things for this community. But I also, you know, want to stress that we're kind of at the beginning of this process, and so we're going to be learning as we go. And I think it's really important, you know, to take what we're learning to help us to inform policies and procedures and even legislative recommendations in the future.
Yeah.
Nicolette, do you have any questions for the YUA?
I do have more of a general question, and I don't know if this would be your guys' specialty exactly, but what I was wondering, because, you know, I've considered becoming a foster parent someday, and right now my sister and her wife are looking into becoming foster parents as well, but they said that they have to go through these training classes or something like that. So what I was kind of wondering is if somebody is interested in becoming a foster parent or fostering one of these youths through you guys, what sort of process would they have to go through, or what requirements would they have to meet?
Yeah, so we don't have the classes like DHS does. What we do is more one-on-one training. The foster care certifier will meet usually at the applicant's home or, you know, anywhere that they're comfortable, and really do more of a one-on-one training. But basically the whole process is, first there's a criminal background check. Then we do what we call the home study interview, where we really do an in-depth interview and get to know you really, really well, just to make sure that you're able to handle, you know, a youth that has had some trouble, and also that you have the setup and it'll fit, you know, well with your life. So we do that interview. We vet people very carefully. Then we do the training piece. Part of that is just one-on-one meeting with the certifier, and then part of it you do kind of a workbook on your own. We do a physical safety check of the home, so we, you know, require things like fire extinguishers and certain things would need to be locked up, firearms and alcohol, things like that. So we do kind of a physical safety check, and then we certify you, and you're certified for 1 year, and then we do an annual recertification. The whole process, including the training, takes about 8 weeks typically. So if people are interested, we have a website. We also have a Facebook page, and then, you know, people are encouraged to call their local certifier to get more information. We're always happy to talk with people.
And Kelly, what do you do, for instance, in the case that you had this summer, how do you help the people who may be interested in being foster parents to someone who is an OYA youth? How do you help them to support their gender identity exploration or concerns?
So I was really lucky in that the home that I certified here in Eugene, it was a transgender couple. One was transgender male to female, and the other one was female to male. And so they were so wonderful. They're already plugged into the transgender community here in Eugene, and they are one of the reasons that they felt, you know, that they wanted to do this was because of their own experience, and they really wanted to help a youth that was, you know, going through this, you know, this transition. And so they're very passionate and excited about that, and they honestly have much more experience than I do in this. And so as much as I'm helping them, they know way more about it actually than I do. And so I've been very lucky. So again, we're kind of learning as we go. But again, the youth all have the Oregon Health Plan, and so the biggest thing that we're going to start by doing is getting them plugged into a physician that's able to get, help them with the diagnosis that they need, get them into some type of therapy. We have a couple local therapists who actually specialize in adolescents who identify as transgender, and so that's been great. We're kind of getting that set up. And so, again, we're kind of learning as we go, but it's actually been a very inclusive process of everybody kind of on the team, and everybody's really excited about helping to, at least the specific youth start that transition process. And again, I'm really hoping that we can bring more families on board, because we do have 3, 4, 5 other youth currently right now waiting and have absolutely nowhere for them to go as far as foster homes yet. Mm-hmm. And so we do hope to get more foster homes on board and really more solidify our training and our resources and things like that.
Mm-hmm. We will get more. We will do this again at the end of the show. But as long as you just mentioned now, Kelly, that you do have 4 or 5 more youth, if people did want to get in touch with the Oregon Youth Authority and begin the process of becoming certified, how would they contact you?
You can actually go to our website. So it's www.oregon.gov/OIA/pages/foster. Or we have a Facebook page, and that's just facebook.com/OIA fostercare. And then depending on your area, there's different certifiers, but if you just want to call our central number, they can kind of, get you to the right place. And that number is 503-373-7595.
Okay, and we'll repeat those numbers again at the end of the show. Did you have a question, Rowan?
I was going to ask what you just asked.
Okay. It sounds like there's a little bit of a difference between the youth that go into OIA foster care and the youth that are like within OIA custody, within facilities. And a question that I wanted to get to a little bit earlier, but I didn't have a chance to, was for you, Bryant. And I'm just wondering about the chain of custody, because I know that there's a lot of youth who get sentenced and then they end up in state facilities. And if someone is currently trans, gender nonconforming, gender queer, intersex, and they identify a need for services while they're in custody as juveniles, what happens to them once they get into a state facility as adults?
Well, then they go under the Department of Corrections and the guidelines and policies and processes that they have in place. One of the things that we are careful to do is, because we do house youth up until their 25th birthday, we work closely with the Department of Corrections in order to make sure that as we are in the process of developing what our policies and what our operating procedures will look like, that we're working with them so that we don't end up putting something together that would not be supported with the Department of Corrections. But they are ahead of us in this. And so
they are?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so we utilize them as a resource. Mm-hmm. We have their staff on our transgender gender nonconforming committee, and we often look to them for guidance. Mm-hmm. As to how we might implement something or how we might support a youth in a special request.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know. I think a lot of people, when they think about someone who's trans and they're in any kind of state custody, they might think about the movie or this series Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. And what happens to the character there who ends up in solitary because they don't know what else to do with her. She's in a women's facility, but she's being kind of targeted because she's trans. And so the facility, which is run by a for-profit corporation, is interested in minimizing any of its risk. And so it opts to put her into solitary confinement, which is cruel and unusual. Yes. And, you know, even though she hasn't really committed any crimes while she's within the facility. And I think that's a fear that a lot of trans people have, whether they're youth or adults, is that when they enter a federal facility or a state facility, that they will be somehow segregated or, you know, mistreated specifically because of their gender identity. Is that a fear that people have that youth have expressed within your facility?
I think that is a fear. Whether it's spoken or whether it isn't, we recognize that it's a fear, and it's part of what we at the Youth Authority are looking at as to how to minimize that, and recognizing that we don't have the ability or authority to change, you know, any individual's belief or thoughts on any given topic. We are dedicated to higher to raising awareness through education, through exposure, through lots of ways of interacting and engaging with our youth and with our staff to make sure that they have the necessary support from the agency, as well as information and education, so that we can best protect our youth. And so that we can provide adequate and reasonable service, and so that we can challenge ourselves in areas that we may not historically have had to challenge ourselves in order to be a more friendly and reasonable and just a better overall agency and bettering the outcomes of the youth that are in there. But I believe that there is fear, and we have had those concerns voiced. We are very conscious, and we're very sensitive to the confidentiality of our youth, recognizing that we have youth that come to us with needs and with requests, and they may not have shared that with anyone other than maybe one staff person. And I currently have a youth that I'm working with who there is only one staff person who knows that they identify as transgendered, and that they would like to begin to receive some services as a transgendered youth and get some education and some resources. And so we are making sure that confidentiality, safety, and security are at the top of our list with these youth, knowing that just in our general society, people can be very mean and cruel and not so understanding of other people, whether it be based on their race or their gender or ethnicity or religious beliefs. And so we do have a heightened awareness and maybe a sense of expediting and heightened care for our transgendered and queer community.
Does anybody have questions?
Yeah, I guess I just wonder, since y'all are near the beginning of this process, is there anything that you need or that listeners could do to help y'all out in this process?
Oh, there's a whole list. I'll start and I'll let Kelly give her list. But one of the things is I would just invite all Oregonians to get involved with the transgendered community. Contact the Youth Authority. You can contact me with the Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Relations, and I'll be happy to plug you in to some activities that the Youth Authority has. Volunteer, be a voice, be a resource, come out. We currently do not have a support group or I've lost my train of thought here, but we have advisory committees at the Youth Authority. We do not have a specific one for our transgender, queer, LGBTQ community. Ooh, so
this is going to be on my list.
Yeah. So okay. If you're interested in talking about how we can do that and how we can bring the community voice in, what I can tell you is that our youth that are in facility are always requesting to get folks from the community into the facilities in order to share with them, to tell stories, to keep them up to date, to be a resource, and just to be a sounding board and to be a safe place to talk and an affirming voice of security and someone who they know is concerned. And so I would just implore our Oregonians to come out, show your face, be involved, and let these youth know that they aren't forgotten about just because they're incarcerated, but that we care about them and we care about their outcomes.
That sounds great. So would we contact you through the website if we're interested in helping out that way?
Sure.
Okay.
Our office is listed on the website, and you can definitely contact me directly.
Great.
If people want to contact you, how would they reach you besides the website? Can they call you? Can they email you?
Yes, they can call our office, can get you directly involved with and connected with me, and our email addresses are on there also. But again, it's the Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Relations, and they can connect you with me. Or if you call one of our facilities, if you call McLaren, we have an office there. They'll connect you with me, but it'll be easy to find me at the Youth Authority.
Kelly, what about from your end? What can the community do to support the work that you're doing?
Well, of course, my number one on my list is that we need families that are willing to get certified to take these youth in and be full-time caregivers. And so, statewide, we only have about 40 OYA foster homes total. We only have two right now that serve the transgender youth or even just LGBTQ population in general. And so we very, very much need families to step up and take these youth in and support them in their gender identity needs and things like that. So number one is that we need families to volunteer and become certified to be foster families. Now, if people want to help but they can't commit to doing it full time, we also need respite providers. So these are folks that will get certified. It's a much smaller certification process, but they get certified and then they just help care for youth occasionally. So when foster parents need a break for the weekend or whatever, then these folks will care for the youth just occasionally. But again, we really, really need foster homes in the whole entire state that are, for youth in general, honestly, we only have, I think, two foster homes in the Portland area. Total. I think in the whole state, we only have one African-American foster parents. So really, we need to kind of have a more diverse set of foster parents. We need more foster parents, and specifically, we need foster parents that are willing to take in the LGBTQ youth that we serve.
Wow, this has been a really good conversation. We're sort of getting near the last 2 or 3 minutes of the show. Is there anything really important that people need to say in the last couple of minutes?
I have an announcement not related to this conversation, so.
Okay, why don't we just wrap up with getting their contact info one more time, and then let's go to your announcement. So, Bryant, I know we've repeated it several times, but this need is really here. How can people contact you?
Go to the Oregon Youth Authority website, click on the Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Relations, and they will get you directly to me.
And that's how they can volunteer too, if we want to start an advisory.
Yes, we have a volunteer process that I will get you information on, or however it is you want to volunteer. We can find a creative way to get you involved.
Great. And Kelly, how can people reach you?
Yes, so the website, whether you want to get Bryant or for the foster care page, is www.oregon.gov/OYA. So that's the website. The foster care Facebook page is facebook.com/OYA foster care, all one word. And then if you want to call and get information, 503-373-7595.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on Transpositive today. We really appreciate it. We're going to do a couple of announcements before we close. So if you can stay on through the end of the show, that'd be great.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Rowan?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the Equi Institute, that's Equi like equity, is having a grand opening party this following Tuesday from 4:30. So not obviously not today, but next Tuesday, from 4:30 to 7:30 at the Q Center in our space, which is the entrance just closest to Mississippi Street. And we're going to have a tour and a raffle and some speechifying and some light refreshments. So if people are at all interested in Portland's first queer and trans primary care clinic, then you should come by and check it out.
And what date was that?
Dates, boy. That is 7 days from today, which would make it the 11th.
Oh, National Coming Out Day.
Yeah. Yes. Ta-da. We maybe even did that on purpose.
Well, that's so great. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight for Trans Positive. Do you have any closing announcements, Nicolette?
Oh, I did just want to remind people that you can listen to all our audio on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/transpositivepdx. And you can also find updates on the show and all our information on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/transpositivepdx. So feel free to check that out and stay tuned.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, the transportation choice of Portlanders since 1946, with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab has a mobile app that allows you to book a cab with your phone, available at the App Store, Google Play, and at radiocab.net. Or, if you prefer, you can talk to a real person at 503-227-1212. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Space is the Place, showing Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. Space is the Place is an Afrofuturist science fiction classic film released in 1974. Sun Ra, space age prophet, philosopher and Afrojazz bandleader, lands his spaceship in Oakland, expanding the cosmic consciousness of African Americans. Again, that's Space is the Place, Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of your homepage under Community Events. Thank you.